Well, it's going to be interesting, I think, today to study the chronology and also the Bible, both. We've got the genealogy, of course, which is our chronology, called the BG, and the acronym is BG, which is pronounced also big, like the word, but you can also get other words like bag, beg, bug, bog, all kinds of different words from the BG acronym. But it's April 5th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1453 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green with you again today for the study in the Crucible of Credible Creed, and we're still in paragraph 911, just toward the end of it, talking about the Hittite kings. It's so important to the Egyptian chronology that the Hittite kings are understood and correlated because of what Peter Huber calls the Amarna-Hittite synchronisms. Right here, Amarna-Hittite synchronisms, Peter Huber mentions, and that's why he puts Ramesses II in 1315 BCE. And we don't actually agree with any of his other dates for the other Egyptian kings. It's just for that particular Egyptian king, because it's based on the Amarna-Hittite synchronisms and a solar eclipse in the time of Mursili II, which is dated by both him and us as 1340 BCE. And everyone agrees that if it really is a solar eclipse that is being recorded by this king of the Hittites, Mursili II, then it was in his year 10, but like most eclipses that are recorded by ancient people, we never know if they're writing about an eclipse or what it is because they don't have a word for eclipse like we do. But in the abstract of this article that Peter Huber wrote, it was published online on January 1st, 2011, but it was from the article, The Astronomical Basis of Egyptian Chronology of the Second Millennium B.C., Peter J. Huber. It was published in Journal of Egyptian History. And, yeah, I actually have a... You can get the reference for that by looking that up yourself. And I've not been able to get a copy of the article, but this is the abstract, and it's all we need, because he states the summary of the findings when he says that Ramesses II is 1315 BCE, or BC as he calls it, because that's what many people call it. And the BCE 1315 is based on the Amarna-Hittite synchronisms. And when we look at that, here is from the History of Babylon, the end of chapter 2, paragraph 11, in that range of the History of Babylon in part 1, it gives the dates of the Egyptian kings at Amarna, Akhenaten, Tutankhamun, Ayat, and Horemheb. And we see that Tut died here in about January of 1348, very probably January of 1348. And Tut has very good lunar alignments. He's got a lunar day 1 in his year 1. He's got, that's not his year 1, is it? Let me see, what is that? That's a lunar day 1. Whether that's year 1, we'd have to consult the articles upon which this was based. But no, it's clear he's got two lunar day 15s. And so, no, that year 14, okay, that's still in the reign of Akhenaten, I think, that one. So he's got a year 6 and a year 7, lunar day 1. These are the ones of, and two full moon dates. Or here's another lunar day 17 here in year 8 of Tut. But we see yeah, Lunar Day 1s. Lunar Day 15 in Year 4, which is an exact new moon, you see. So we've got these really good lunar alignments for King Tut when we date him as year 1357, which we did here. So although we move around in the articles, we end up back at 1357 for Tut. And we end up with discovering later on, there's the Born and Raised article, which talks about in chapter 2, paragraph 7 and A, chapter 2, paragraph 7A, talks about Sejanus, but we've got this article in the Wild Road article. That's what this was. In chapter 1, it goes all through the details of how we arrive at this other Amarna synchronism, with 1327 being year 1 of Seti the First, and the rising of Sothis in the year 1324 is part of that important alignment there, right here. This is paragraph 112. Paragraph 15 also talks about the Amarna Hittite synchronisms. So there's a lot of interesting scholarly work that's been done. The article by Jared Miller in 2007 about the year 9 of Mursili. That's Mursili the Second also, so that's his year 9 from 1350 would be about 1342. And the year 1 of Horemheb cannot be earlier than that, according to him. So we end up arriving at Horemheb in 1341 in this article. And that's just the Wild Road article, which was written after the Trojan War article. And that was also written after the B4 article, and that was also written after the Crucible article. So we're reading the Crucible article. King Mursili thus ruled 26 years from 1350 to 1324 BCE, and his son Muwatalli from 1324 to 1301 BCE, as approximately. When Mursili III ran away after 7 years' rule, Hattusili is witnessed, he's the next king, accusing Pharaoh Ramesses II of providing asylum for the fugitive, which he denies, and the two avoid going to war by a peace treaty on a silver tablet crafted by the Hittites that Pharaoh Ramesses II accepts in his year 21. And that's how we get the alignment with the eclipse of 1340, the year 1 of Ramesses the Second in 1315, and his year 21 in 1294, which means that his year 1 being 25 years after the eclipse of 1340, we get 25 and 21 is 46, which also equals 16 plus 23 plus 7, with the first 10 years of the 26 years of Mursili the Second having arrived and elapsed prior to the solar eclipse of 1340. So 16 is the last 16 years of his 26-year rule. And the arithmetic is quite satisfying to see that it adds up. And we know the number of years that each of the Hittite kings ruled to some degree of accuracy. That's the reason. I mean, this is the reason why we try to accommodate these numbers so carefully. Now, when King David, to conclude our paragraph here, we seek peace and pursue it as Christians, even to today. With King David now in the next paragraph, with King David ruling 1058 to 1017 BCE, and so even in the Crucible article, we have the same exact date that we still have for David. We find that Pharaoh Susen I was ruling in Egypt during King David's reign. Susen I, this is a forensic reconstruction of Susanne the First, based on what they found of his mummy or his remains. So, and everything they know about him was used to construct this forensic model of him. That's Susanne the First, not the Second. Susanne the First ruled during David's reign, but he also began ruling prior to King David also in our chronology from about 1085. And also during David's reign, there were reigning pharaohs Amenemope, Osorkon on the Elder, and Sihamon, at the same time as the National World Trade Center 9/11 Memorial remembers its victims. This is paragraph 9/11 of the Crucible of Credible Creed that we're reading. Do we recreate King David at the same time, 9/11, in our paragraph number? Still, keep in mind that this is not the quote-unquote right or quote-unquote true chronology, but a crucible for history. It's a fascinating statement I make there, and that is reflecting how I felt at the time, that I couldn't say that something was right or true and really have it be true. It had to be used to test history, and if it could bring out a better, more accurate, and more what is the word, more detailed view of history, you know, a more we want to say accurate, but it's hard to judge accuracy for ancient events. But if it could bring out that, you know, if it could bring out the best history, or the, if it could bring out history that we had confidence in, then that was what we were interested in. If it could, you know, elucidate history, right? Shed light on history. That's what the idea was, but or purify history, really. Purify like a crucible purifies metals. So that's it for our study of the Crucible article for today and of the genealogy, possibly, although we might come back to it at the end. There's so many things to talk about. It's really wonderful for me, too, to be able to review it all and look back and see where I made progress and what I learned, and how it progressed in the studies. Oh, I know what I wanted to show you. There's something else I wanted to show, definitely. There's something else very important that I want to show, which is how I arrived, when I was studying my family history, how did I start doing the genealogy? Well, how did I start researching ancient history? Well, it came about because I did a search at some point for Armes, and as I realize now, very likely was something like this, Armes and Hermes. If you put that in quotes in the Google search, the only thing that come up are the articles that I wrote after I learned about it, and the one book, Synchronology by Charles Crosthwaite, 1839, and that's where, when I clicked on his book, I found Armes and Hermes, and his book is the only book on the whole internet, the only place, because my articles were written after I did the search. So his was the only hit in the Google search, the only one that brought up these words, actually names, Armes and Hermes, together like that, Armes and Hermes. He's the only one. His book was the only source that had those two together. So, once I read his book, everything changed, because I learned about the Trojan War from his book. And now, there were many Trojan Wars, the eclipse of 1340 that we talked about, and Peter Huber's the only one who dates it 1340, other than we, who also date it 1340. But that eclipse was also thought to have been significant with regard to the fact that it also was visible at Troy, and one of the Trojan Wars may have coincided with this solar eclipse at Troy, and that's why it became significant, and that's why it was, you know, remembered by somebody. But I can't find the source for that, actually, but I must have seen a source for that somewhere, and that's why I mentioned it in the Iron Furnace. But Hermes and Hermes are the same in Egyptian and Greek orthography. Mr. Crosthwaite writes in Synchronology on page 162, his book from 1839. And so once I started learning from his book about the chronology, that's when the genealogy began to take shape. So I wanted to mention and not forget to point that out. So 2 Chronicles 27, 25 years old was Jotham when he began to reign, and for 16 years he reigned in Jerusalem. He was the son of Uzziah, or Azariah, as he's also known. We should probably take a look at that. Let's see. Wherever that would be. Where would that be? Oh, yes, look at this. Wonderful. Manetho. Look at Manetho. Look at Manetho. We see here we have Acherez, 8 years. That's how we get that I, probably the king called A-Y, I. And this name Acherez in Greek means sort of the same thing as the eye, the human eye. It's something to do with describing the same thing that the name A-Y is in Egyptian. But 8 years for him would mean from 1349 to 1341, or 1348 to 1341 if he's got 7 years, like a chorus here. In Eusebius, on the list of Manetho's kings of Dynasty 18. And that 8 years, of course, was followed by the 15 years of Keres, and we know that the successor to Ai, whose name was Horemheb, who's called Armez, also by the Hittites, apparently, according to Jared Miller. So this king, Horemheb, we know he had about 14 years of rule, so 15 years fits well with Keres, and then he was preceded by I, so 8 years. So that fits very closely to what we know of the two pharaohs who followed Tutankhamun and who preceded Ramesses the First, who is also, or his name could easily be represented as Armes as well, Ramesses. So yeah, there are some very interesting things in Manetho also. Yeah, I wanted to point that out. I was going to look for our Moses. Where are you? Let's see. I think we're here with Moses somewhere, are we? Did I close that? No, I never would have closed it. I'm using it all the time. It's the Kings. Moses part 2 we're looking for. Well, that was it. I just saw it. Didn't I? No. This is showing one of the lunar alignments in the reign of I, which is a lunar day 29, actually. But because it was the first of the month of Paph 1, it still could be okay. It's close to a new moon. But yeah, we have the lunar alignments of I were not very useful because there were only two of them and they didn't line up very well with the. And here he is, Moses part 2. They didn't line up very well in his reign. The two that we had for him didn't line up very well with the lunar calendar. But anyway, but then again, they were both day one of the Egyptian months, so they maybe didn't have to line up so precisely. But here we have our kings of Judah, and we see Jotham succeeded Azariah, who was called Uzziah. So Jotham ruled from 757 in the genealogy until 741, 16 years. In the Jewish calendar, that's 3004 to 3020, as I represent there. although I haven't been checking those dates in the Jewish calendar recently. But 25 years old was Jotham when he began to reign. He ruled for 16 years, and his mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. And he kept doing what was right in Jehovah's eyes, according to all that Uzziah, his father, had done. Only he did not invade the temple of Jehovah. Uzziah, we saw in the previous chapter, had invaded the temple and offered illegitimate incense. He was not a priest. He didn't have authority. He offered incense in the temple. However, the people were yet acting ruinously in the days of Jotham. He himself built the upper gate of Yahweh's house, and on the wall of Ophel he did a great deal of building, and cities he built in the mountainous region of Judah, and in the woodlands he built fortified places and towers. And he himself warred against the king of the sons of Ammon, and eventually proved stronger than they were, so that the sons of Ammon gave him in that year 100 silver talents and 10,000 core measures of wheat and 10,000 of barley. This was what the sons of Ammon paid to him, also in the second year and the third. So Jotham kept strengthening himself, for he prepared his ways before Jehovah his God. As for the rest of the affairs of Jotham and all his wars and his ways, there they are, written in the book of the kings of Israel and of Judah. 25 years old he happened to be when he began to reign. And for 16 years he reigned in Jerusalem, as our chronology also shows. Finally, Jotham lay down with his forefathers, and they buried him in the city of David, and Ahaz his son began to reign in place of him. That's the end of 2 Chronicles 27. Okay, so Clark, we actually have Clark. But you know what we forgot to do is our study. We forgot to do our daily study. Habakkuk, we're going to do chapter 3 of Habakkuk today. What about 2 Chronicles 27? There we go. He reigns well, Clark says about Jotham. All right. And our proverb for today . Okay, where is it? There it is. Today's proverb is from Proverbs 14, little children. It's verses 29 and 30. The one slow to anger is wise of a kind, but praised folly is by the hasty of mind. The life of the soul is a heart that is sound. In envious bones is where rot will be found. That was our daily proverb from Proverbs 14, verses 29 and 30 in the Word Green version from 2006. So for our continuation now of our Bible reading, we turn to Habakkuk, if you will, chapter 3, about which also Clark has some very, very interesting things to say. And he also quotes from the well-known commentator, Louth. Robert Louth has written a book called Prelections, and we've already quoted from it in our study recently. Let's see. Let's look it up here. I thought I clicked on it already. Okay, there we go. Right, okay, right. On Habakkuk 3 and 3, Louth says, what crowns, this is what, this is the comment by Clark, Adam Clark. When he comments on Habakkuk 3 and 3, which is God himself proceeded to come from Teman, even a holy one from Mount Paran, he says that Louth says, "What crowns the sublimity of this piece is the singular elegance of the close, and were it close, C-L-O-S-E, and were it not that antiquity was here and there thrown its veil, or has, rather, excuse me, were it not that antiquity has here and there thrown its veil of obscurity over it, there could not be conceived a more perfect and masterly poem of its kind." Clark says the prophet here, or hence, selects the most striking facts of that first deliverance, talking about an interesting thing there, talking about that God came from Teman, even a holy one from Mount Paran. So let's read Habakkuk chapter 3, shall we? The prayer of Habakkuk the prophet in dirges. Dirges, a dirge is a funeral piece of music. But I think that the whole prayer of Habakkuk, as Clark points out very brilliantly, nobody else seemed to point it out, but it's evidently a song that was sung, maybe even at the temple. So he says in verse 1 of chapter 3, the prayer of Habakkuk the prophet in dirges, which is a funeral march or something like that. "O Jehovah," he says, "I have heard the report about you. I have become afraid, O Jehovah, of your activity. In the midst of the years, O bring it to life. In the midst of the years, may you make it known. During the agitation, to show mercy, may you remember." God himself proceeded to come from Teman, even a holy one from Mount Paran, Selah. And we see that word Selah, which is a musical term indicating either a pause in the music or a change in the music. "His dignity covered the heavens, and with his praise the earth became filled. As for his brightness, it got to be just like the light. He had two rays issuing out of his hand, and there the hiding of his strength was." Also, Clark comments interestingly that this note about the rays issuing from the hands is something that is talked about by or is adopted. Let's see, I didn't click. At the end of his comment on verse 4, he says, "Probably from this, the Jupiter Keranos, or Jupiter Brontes, of the heathens was borrowed." Sounds like he's talking about the gods of the Greeks or the Romans. I'm not sure what he's talking about, or whether he's talking about some other heathens. I don't know. But he says that this Jupiter was always represented with forked or zigzag lightnings in his hand, just as is described here, the two rays issuing out of his hand. And there the hiding of his strength was. The hiding, he says, could have been referring to the cloud, okay, such as was present at Mount Sinai, for example, when there were lightnings as well. Now, before him, pestilence kept going, verse 5, and burning fever would go forth at his feet. Before him, that is. He stood still, verse 6, that he might shake up the earth. Yahweh stood still. He saw and then caused nations to leap. Clark even comments that, he makes a great comment here, that even by just looking, Jehovah can cause nations to leap or be overthrown. And the eternal mountains got to be smashed, the indefinitely lasting hills bowed down. The walkings of long ago are his. And this is also translated in verse 6 as, his ways are everlasting in the King James Version. But Clark points out that the everlastingness of his ways is not being referred to so much as the walkings of long ago, or the fact that he walked over these eternal mountains and the indefinitely lasting hills. These everlastingness of Jehovah's ways had to do with the fact that he walked in the ways that were everlasting, which is fascinating also to me. Under what is hurtful, I saw the tents of Cushan. Cushan refers to Arabia. The tent cloths of the land of Midian began to be agitated. And Clark points out that either these two places are synonymous, or he's using their terminology as a in a poetic language to... this is verse 7. Right. The names are possibly, he says, poetically used to express the same place. It is against the rivers, O Jehovah. Is it against the rivers, O Jehovah? This is a question. Is it against the rivers, O Jehovah? Is it against the rivers, verse 8, that your anger has become hot? Or is your fury against the sea? For you went riding upon your horses, your chariots were salvation. In its nakedness your bow comes to be covered. The sworn oaths of the tribes are the things said. Selah. With rivers you proceeded to split the earth. Mountains saw you, they got to be in severe pains. A thunderstorm of waters passed through. The watery deep gave forth its sound. On high its hands it filled up, it lifted up. Sun, moon stood still in the lofty abode thereof. Like light your own arrows kept going. The lightning of your spear served for brightness. With denunciation you went marching through the earth. In anger you went thrashing the nations. And you went forth for the salvation of your people, to save your anointed one. You broke to pieces the head one out of the house of the wicked one. There was a laying of the foundation bare, clear up to the neck, Selah. With his own rods you pierced the head of his warriors. With his own rods you pierced the head of his warriors when they moved tempestuously to scatter me. Their high glee was as of those bent on devouring an afflicted one in a place of concealment. Through the sea you trod with your horses, through the heap of vast waters. I heard, and my belly began to be agitated at the sound of my... At the sound my lips quivered. Rottenness began to enter into my bones, and in my situation I was agitated, that I should quietly wait for the day of distress, for his coming up to the people, that he may raid them. Although the fig tree itself may not blossom, and there may be no yield on the vines, the work of the olive tree may actually turn out a failure, and the terraces themselves may actually produce no food. The flock may actually be severed from the pen, and there may be no herd in the enclosures. Yet as for me, I will exult in Jehovah himself. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. Yahweh, the sovereign Lord, is my vital energy, and he will make my feet like those of the hinds. And upon my high places he will cause me to tread, to the director on my stringed instruments. That concludes our study for April 5th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 15:25 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now.